It's been quite wet early morning, and so it's good to see that people managed to negotiate the traffic in this rain. And then we, as members are aware, we are going to move straight into, after we've opened up with the credit amnesty review, just an update on that, the status report on the debt counselling process itself. But before we get there, we've already had the special messages around Women's Day and so on, and I must just thank the media in general for their coverage of women achievers and the work that has been done, but also the very many challenges that remain in this regard. And we would want to call on the media that in the respective areas of their focus, as it were, they ought to try and identify, let us just say, look amnesty there, what are the implications for women in this regard, you see, so that there are many different ways one can address the challenges facing women, or indeed some of the achievements made in this regard. And I would really like to appeal to the media to exercise their proactive approach that they are well known for in this regard as well. Thank you. And two members that are here, certainly we do have apologies, written and formal apologies from Honourable Hill Lewis, who has been struck down with the flu, it seems. And then we, as we know, we have a standing apology from the Honourable Ariane Ambrosini, who is on medical leave still. We're aware of that. And I certainly am not aware of any other apology, but I will check with the secretary here on my left, Mr. Hermans. Apologies. Apology.
No, Chairperson, I didn't receive any other apologies from anyone.
We asked for at this stage, I know the planes are facing challenges regarding the weather. I know my own plane had been delayed for 2 hours last night. So there are members who are on flights as well, so that may be it. But I would like to make assumptions at this point in time. And then we have the adoption of the agenda here. Looking at the adoption of the agenda, just noting where we are with this, I don't see any other issue that we may need to bring to your attention, but once again let me check with you, Mr. Hermans. We will, you will recall that the committee took a decision last meeting that we would factor in carbon tax, I think, etc. And so there are one or two changes to the program. There are certain changes with respect to the date of the debate, etc., of the SEZ, and we will deal with that under announcements. Is that all right? To get the program at that point itself. Right. Honourable McIntosh, you spoke to me informally before the meeting started. Now, it's probably very useful. I did say to you, well, look, please just stay for the opening, for us just to get a little written situation indicating not the detail of this issue, but that it is necessary for you to absent yourself for a short, you know, while, I think it is about an hour or something, and then return for future when that happens, but not this morning. We have dealt with that. On that note, can we have someone to propose the adoption of the agenda? Thank you, Honourable McIntosh, seconded by the Honourable Mabasa. Thank you very much. And we then go immediately into the what is noted here. The update on the credit amnesty review and a status report on the debt counselling process. And we welcome the Chief Director, Policy and Legislation, Consumer and Corporate Regulation, and that is Mr. McDonald Nyatsi-Jonesy. And also accompanying him today is Mr. Potwana, the Director, Consumer and Corporate Regulation Division. I think it's just sufficient for people to nod their heads. I may know you, but not everyone does. And then we also... Then the Office of the National Credit Regulator, we have Ms. Machigare, Chief Executive Officer, NCR. Yes, a well-known face. We've seen you a number of times this year, I believe. And also Mr. Mashapa, the Company Secretary of the NCR, and Mr. Tongwani, the Chief Operating Officer, I'm sure, NCR. Thank you for bringing a full team. I don't see anyone else's name here, so perhaps Mr. Nyatsi-Jonesy, you could indicate the issue of the DDG plus the extra person.
No, thanks, Chair. Our apology, the DDG is not available because of other commitments. And then in case of Director Potwana, there's a Deputy Director, plus Mukaba.
Welcome to Mr. Mukaba, is that correct? Mukaba, yes. Klaas, Mr. Klaas Mukaba. Right. Okay. On that particular note, I'd like to ask yourself then, Mr. Nyatsi-Jonesy, I think we've all got the PowerPoint in front of us, is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Look, you know, sitting behind me, totally out of the radar screen, we have our researchers. I hope you're not sitting there, Mr. Quandis. I can't catch your eye because I'm never going to get it this way. If you could just sit where we can, it's a bit closer, you know, within range. Thanks. Right, I don't like people off the radar screen. Thank you very much, Mr. Nyatsi-Jonesy. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. And honourable members, as you may know, the purpose of the brief today is about the credit amnesty as well as the debt counselling in South Africa. However, we have separated the two. We have separated the two, and then we will start with the credit amnesty, and then I will be assisted by the NCR and the DTI team. I will do the presentation, but when questions come, we will see how to share them and respond accordingly. Okay. Without further ado, here is the table of contents of the presentation. I think members can read its purpose, background, context of credit amnesty, and the primary aims of credit amnesty, as well as the methodology and the recommendations generally, and then the issue of conclusion, where to from here. The purpose is to brief the honourable members and then to request the committee that maybe we can move towards recommendations. There are three recommendations, so we chose two. We will come with the background, and then there is a legislative consideration and the form of credit amnesty, timelines, implementation, monitoring and evaluation. How this process came about, I'm describing it as follows. The Select Committee on Trade and International Relations approached the DTI to say there is a problem that the 2007-08 credit amnesty, it seems as if it was not effective. Can you evaluate that? Can you look at that? And then in this regard, the DTI at face value or cursorily determined whether or not the previous credit amnesty was effective or has it achieved the intended purpose. Without prejudging the above determination, the DTI requested the NCR to go empirically on issues in other words, to produce evidence, hardcore evidence, whether it was effective or not. And then they appointed a consultant from their side, and in consultation with the relevant stakeholders took place. And then I must emphasize, these relevant stakeholders included the banks, because there are little talks outside there, that there were no consultations. The banks were in the equation. I'm doing it deliberately so that we can interrogate this matter. An interim finding was presented to the select committee, and it was agreed by that by February 2013, the study should have been finalized. Indeed, in February-March 2013, the DTI considered the report, which was tabled by the NCR and its consultant. And then we discussed those issues so that we should go to our principals within the DTI. And then the discussions and possible recommendations are as follows. Here is the context of credit amnesty. Credit is a key enabling mechanism for investment and development. We can give an example here. When you see these companies, although companies are not under the Credit Act, generally, when you see these companies like mines operating, they are not using their inverted commas, their personal salaries, in order to invest in the country. They go to the bank and request for a credit. So therefore, if you see the mine extending their operations, they request the loans. So even ourselves, it will be very difficult to use your salary in order to come with massive projects. You have to have access to loans. So what is happening therefore is that access to loans is a problem. To individuals is a problem. So therefore, the economy cannot grow because there is no investment. However, at the same time, you find that people might have been given loans which they cannot repay for whatever reasons. And then we will talk about reckless lending later. You find that you are just given loans recklessly without coming with affordability, whether you will afford or not. And therefore, that can impair your record. You can be in the credit bureau. So I was just explaining so that the discussion can go on with the flow. A failure to facilitate widespread access to credit often results in significant opportunity cost to entrepreneurs and the wider economy. A credit spurs consumer spending, a key driver of economic growth. Inaccessible or expensive credit hinders growth. I think we have already substantiated on that. Access to a sustainable credit market is essential to all goals. Primary aims of credit amnesty: reducing credit impairment by addressing its causes, removing barriers to credit and assist those consumers who can afford credit to access credit, achieving the goals of the National Credit Act, assisting consumers impacted by economic recession. Probably that is the aim of one of the aim of this credit amnesty. Assisting consumers impacted by economic recession, addressing failure to credit providers to consider broader economic factors, removing barriers to employment. We have already discussed this issue to say some people who are in the credit bureau cannot get employment, as an example, even if it is not related, because if I'm not going to be put in a position of trust or handling finance, why do I have to be punished if I applied to be a domestic worker? I'm just giving a silly example. So there is no relationship. But the way how the system is being abused is to say, don't employ this person because he's on the credit bureau. Reducing overpricing, stimulating economic growth. There cannot be growth if we don't have access to this issue of access. And then broadening access to credit providers. The methodology that was used is identify the causes of credit impairment, consult with stakeholders again. Stakeholders were credit bureaus, banks. They have an association called BASA. It was consulted and others. Conduct impact assessment, determine scope of data removal, draft affordability assessment guidelines, and then those guidelines are in the process of being finalized by September. Conduct research on discretionary income. If you come to McDonald's and you find that after spending all the things, do I still have money left to spend or to dispose? Draft advice listing rules. I'm advised that these rules are being drafted now that we're speaking. And then find means to incentivize repayment of debt at certain causes of high cost of credit. The National Credit Regulator, the NCR, appointed an independent firm of actuaries and analysts to conduct an impact assessment of the likely impact of various data removal scenario, including 1, number of consumers impacted, degree to which consumers are impacted, credit acceptances, risk to credit providers. In other words, whatever we want to do, we should see to it that this market is not destabilized. So those people who are saying we want to kill the credit providers are not telling the truth, because we want both stakeholders to have a maximum benefit of the from the market. Perceived least risk proposal, that is option number 1. Removal of adverse information listing having a value equal to or less than 10,000 irrespective of non-payment. Removal of all paid up adverse information listing on ongoing basis. In other words, if we agree on certain criteria that this should happen, it should not be a once-off. It should happen on a continuous basis. Removal of all paid up judgments on an ongoing basis. What happens is that people have judgments against them, and then the judgments remains sort of effective even if payment has been effected. And then therefore we are saying the moment you pay, the judgment must be taken out. And then if we follow this recommendation, number of consumers impacted upon, it will be 1.5 million. So these are the people to benefit from this scenario. Note the DTI recommended this proposal to the select committee as it the proposal that will have the least adverse impact on credit providers. Perceived medium risk proposal 2, removal of all adverse information listing irrespective of the value and irrespective of non-payment, removal of all paid up adverse information listing on an ongoing basis, removal of all paid up judgments on an ongoing basis. Number to be affected here is 1.6 million. Note this proposal will result in a small increase in credit providers' risk portfolio and may result in smaller credit providers' closure and in a decrease in the supply of credit. The select committee opted for this proposal. Number 3, removal of all adverse information and judgment listing irrespective of value and irrespective of non-payment. Removal of all paid up adverse information listing on an ongoing basis. Removal of all paid up judgments on an ongoing basis. Number of consumers impacted upon will be 2.2 million. Impact on credit risk portfolios, no impact except for microloans increase by 1.3%. And then it refers to the study or the report. This proposal will result in an increase in credit providers' risk portfolios and may result in smaller credit providers' closure and in a decrease in the supply of credit. This proposal was rejected by both the DTI and Select Committee. Key recommendations. to proceed with a responsible amnesty by removing some credit information. Paid up judgments and adverse information listing should be removed on an ongoing basis. And then Brazil is quoted as an example where this thing has been done. Credit providers will be required to conduct more comprehensive affordability assessments. Credit providers will be required to use discretionary income guidelines. Credit providers will be required to prove that consumers have the discretionary income they claim. The NCR should continue to audit credit providers' affordability assessments on an ongoing basis. The NCR should prosecute all cases of reckless lending. If there is a reckless lending, they have been prosecuting, but now the NCR will give various examples of reckless lending prosecution. Listing rules are required to ensure consumers are properly notified and given sufficient time to remedy the default. Credit literacy programs should include NCR materials, both in credit retail outlets and elsewhere throughout the credit life cycle. Abuses such as collecting prescribed debt, inappropriate garnishee orders, and exorbitant credit, the insurance should be prevented. Here, the issue of prescribed debt, in terms of the law, not Credit Act, there is a law of prescription. Prescription against a person generally is 3 years. Maybe, corrected if I'm wrong, let's say it's 3 years. After 3 years, if you never issued a letter of demand, then the debt prescribed automatically. But what happened is that these people, notwithstanding that prescription, they still, on the fourth year, as an example, write a letter of demand. In reality, it should be unlawful because it is prescribed. And then you find that you start to pay maybe 10 rand as they requested. If you do that, that original debt revives, comes into being again, and then you are back into indebtedness. And then the issue of garnishee orders, generally it falls under the jurisdiction of the Department of Justice. With their legislation, we wrote letters through the minister to the chairperson of the portfolio committee to say, can you include something that will deal with the issue of garnishee orders? Will have to be given the status, where is it now? But as for now that I'm talking to you, I don't have such, but we can confirm that the Department of Justice is doing something. Garnishee order, by the way, is where the employer is requested to subtract money, to deduct money, and pay the creditor. That is the money from the employee who is a debtor. And then how can credit amnesty be a success? Consider legislative amendments, if any. Legislative amendments should deal with ongoing removal of adverse information. The NCA should be aligned with the legislation that deals with the debt collection and garnishee orders. And then what form credit amnesty should take? The minister should be empowered to issue regulations in order to effect this credit amnesty. Timelines, a notice and procedure be followed and be drafted on credit amnesty for issuance by the minister. Public should be consulted for 30 days and then this process of consultation and the issuance of the notice can start by June, which has already gone by, and then September 2013 respectively. Probably we may shift these timelines by a month. Implementation of the notice may be effected on October, therefore maybe November. Monitoring and evaluation can start. Monitoring should commence immediately and evaluation should happen on 31st March 2014, and the results, if any, should be implemented by April 2014. And generally, this is the expose of the credit amnesty. and then we are here to shed some light to the portfolio committee. And then before I conclude, is that I must emphasize that the NCR will have, without taking the chairpersonship, the NCR may have to comment here and there, if you can allow them to do so, and the team from the DTI. That's the end of the presentation, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chief Director, Mr. Nyatsi Tenzi. You really have taken us right through this very succinctly and clearly. Thank you very much indeed. Now, what we'd like to do at this point, of course, is two approaches to it. You've given us this on the Amnesty project presentation. Of course, we also have a requirement on the status report on the debt counselling process. I think, members, it may be useful for us to get both, because they do have an impact on one another, and then engage with questioning once we've had that. Are you all comfortable with that approach? Yes. Right. So on that basis then, let us move directly to the NCR, and that is the Chief Officer, Executive Officer there. I'm sure you'll be doing it, won't you, Ms. Matsigare? Was it Mr. Tongwani who's going to be dealing with it, the Chief Operating Officer? Right. I'll tell you what you do. As soon as you do start, just give your name for the record, you see? Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members. Before the Chief Operations Officer, you know, goes through the presentation, I just wanted to mention that, you know, the previous speaker did make mention of the fact that, you know, the primary aim of credit amnesty is to reduce credit impairment. Of the 20 million credit active consumers, you know, in this country, 47% of those are considered to be impaired, in the sense that they have accounts that are 3 months and more in arrears, have judgments and address listings. Some of those consumers have had to go under debt review, under debt cancelling. Now, debt cancellers are individuals that are registered with the National Credit Regulator to assist consumers who are over indebted. Mr. Tongwane, you know, our Chief Operations Officer, will take you through, you know, the status of debt cancelling, where we are, you know, in that process. Thank you. Obed, over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and Honourable Members of the House, and Madam CEO. As indicated by the theme of my presentation, I will be taking you through the debt cancelling process, or the concept of debt cancelling in our country. My presentation is going to start touch on the following: the purpose of the Act, with special emphasis on debt cancelling. Debt cancelling as a mechanism to deal with over-indebtedness, registration of debt cancellers, debt cancelling statistics, support and promotion of debt cancelling, challenges that we find or that are commonly found in the debt cancelling industry, and the proposed solutions. Now, Honourable Members, debt cancelling is a totally new notion introduced by the National Credit Act to assist over-indebted consumers. Sorry about that. As I said, debt cancelling is a totally new concept or notion introduced by the National Credit Act to assist over-indebted consumers. The rationale for the introduction of debt cancelling is found in the purpose of the Act, as enshrined in Section 3 thereof. And Section 3 provides as follows: the purpose of the National Credit Act is, among others, to protect consumers by promoting responsibility in the credit market by encouraging responsible borrowing, avoidance of over-indebtedness and fulfillment of financial obligations by consumers, discouraging reckless credit granting by credit providers and contractual default by consumers, addressing and preventing over-indebtedness of consumers and providing mechanisms for resolving over-indebtedness. It was pursuant to the last mentioned proviso or provision that debt cancelling was born. Now, a question may be posed, what is debt cancelling or what is a debt canceller? Section 1 of the Act provides definitions for most concepts and words found in the body of the Act. However, for some reason, it does not define the word debt cancelling or a debt canceller. In line with the rules of interpretation of statutes, we can therefore only resort to the ordinary grammatical meaning of the word, which according to the Oxford Dictionary is a person trained to give guidance or advice on debt-related matters. As required by the Act, debt cancellors are supposed to be registered with the NCR to operate as such. Conversely, to operate without registration is an offense because this is tantamount to fraud. And maybe at this point in time, I must say to the honorable members that should there be persons operating within your respective constituencies as unregistered debt cancellors, bring this to the attention of the NCR so that appropriate action can be taken. The main role of a debt canceller is to assist over-indebted consumers, as earlier alluded to. Now, when a consumer experiences financial difficulties, they are entitled to approach a registered canceller for help. The debt canceller will then evaluate the financial situation or position of that particular consumer to establish whether they are indebted or not, over-indebted or not. If they are not over-indebted, the application will be rejected accordingly, and the debt canceller is required to provide the consumer with a rejection letter to that effect. If the debt canceller finds that the consumer is over-indebted, they are supposed then to start a process of engaging the respective credit providers and recommend certain payment proposals. The consumer would consequently be listed on the credit bureau as being under debt review. The implications for this particular listing is to preclude the consumers from obtaining additional credit because already they are technically over-indebted. The consumer then would be required to diligently, stick to the payment proposals that have been made to the credit providers, and failure to do so might lead to the termination of the process. Furthermore, one of the obligations of the debt cancellers during this particular process is to establish whether or not there was reckless lending at the time when the credit agreements were concluded or entered into. If there was recklessness, the debt cancellers may refer the affected credit agreements to the respective court to have them declared reckless. And the consequences are that the credit provider should be barred or precluded from collecting in terms of those agreements. Another question that may be posed is, what are the registration requirements for a debt canceller? The National Credit Act provides that only national persons may be registered as debt cancellers. This means that companies, juristics, and other legal entities cannot be registered as debt cancellers. A person must have at least a minimum of a matric certificate and a qualification, a minimum of 2 years working experience, relevant experience in the business. Legal?
Just a minute. You've got the registration of debt counsellors overhead. Well, you're not addressing that per se. You're addressing a number of other important issues. And one of them was to deal with this, one of the obligations was to establish whether reckless lending was involved. You dealt with a number of other critical issues on missing slide. Now, I don't know if you've since added the subsequent to emailing this presentation to us, whether you can tell us on what page this could appear. Because it's not on what we have in front of us.
Correct, Honourable President Chairperson. What I did was I compiled notes in addition to the main points that are tabulated as per the slide presentation. I thought it would be prudent maybe to explain more as I'm talking to the House about what the counseling is all about.
Yes. You know, you're actually referring to key obligations. And I would never have just left this off myself. These are critical issues. And I really want to advise you to make that information available in writing to us. We didn't put this on Hansard. And some of our members are actually sitting in other committees as well. And they would rely on this. And it's fine to flesh in here and there, not when critical points are being raised. This is an obligation. You've just said so yourself. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I will provide the House with the additional information as indicated. With regards to the further criteria to register, I've already mentioned 2 years relevant experience in the business environment, legal counseling and complaints handling. A person must also complete a debt counseling course that is provided for by institutions that are registered by the NCR. A person must also demonstrate the ability to manage their financial affairs and must not have been convicted of any criminal offence. Now, as far as statistics of registration of debt counselors are concerned, from inception to July 2013, we have registered 2,013 debt counselors. Now, their classification according to geographic spread is as follows. In the Eastern Cape, we have 142. In the Free State, 74. In Gauteng, 1,010. In KZN, 222. In Limpopo, 46. Mpumalanga, 67. Northwest, 79. Northern Cape, 14. The Western Cape, 359. And that totals to 2,018. By profession, accountants, 277. Administrator, 609. Consultants, 149. The counselors, 64. Educators or counselors, 135. Financial consultants, 75. Legal or paralegal, 319. Medical, 9. Sales and marketing, 91. Self-employed, 285. According to race, African, we have 438. Colored, 67. Indian, 128. White, 1380, and in total, 2013. By gender, females, we have in 968. Male, we have 1,045. Honourable Chairperson, we also thought it prudent that the House might be interested in the debt counselling statistics regarding applications for debt counselling by consumers. Now, the stats are as follows. Since inception to June 2013, 422,624 consumers applied for debt counseling, with 82,964 applying in the past financial year. On average, since January this year, about 9,000 consumers applied for debt counseling per month. Now, this is against the backdrop of 20 million credit active consumers with 70 million accounts at the bureaus, 9 million of which are impaired. And impaired records refer to those accounts that are 2 or 3 months in arrear. The NCR decided to accredit payment distribution agencies. Now, these institutions are institutions that are responsible for receiving money from consumers and in turn distributing them to credit providers. We currently have 3 registered PDAs and For the past financial year, they distributed 2.6 billion to credit providers, and since inception, they have distributed 10.6 billion. PDAs are payment distribution agents, and these are entities that were created by the NCR and accredited accordingly in order to collect monies or receive monies from consumers and in turn distribute them to credit providers. Support and promotion of debt cancelling. In order to support, promote and improve debt cancelling, the NCR has embarked on the following initiatives. And we conducted 573 monitoring visits to debt cancellers in the past financial year. The objective of these visits were to monitor compliance with the Act, conditions of registration, NCR guidelines, provide guidance and support as well. We have conducted 6 provincial debt cancelling workshops in Limpopo, the Free State, the Eastern Cape, the Northwest, Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal. Several meetings have been held with law societies to assist where possible with free legal services. We are having regular meetings and workshops with magistrates and various heads of courts. Circulars and public notices are issued on a regular basis to provide guidance and advice the industry and consumers at large. We have conducted debt cancelling awareness campaigns targeting government employees in Mpumalanga, KwaZulu-Natal and the Northwest, and we intending to roll this out to other government departments. Now, Honorable Chairperson, if it's in order, we have brought along some of the pictures for all these initiatives that we have embarked on, and I don't know if it would be appreciated. Yeah.
As a slideshow. Just a handout.
Yeah, it's a handout. We printed them out, so I will be distributing them to the house. This talk to the capacity building workshops for the counselors, the workshops that we have had with magistrates, and all the other initiatives as well that we have done. So I will hand them over to Saroj maybe to distribute. That I make notes on, I think it was given accidentally. Hi, buddy, thank you.
Don't be nervous, you're doing a very good job, you know. What's a few picks? Right.
Right. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. The next part of my slide talks to the challenges that we are experiencing in the debt cancelling space. Like any other industry, there are challenges within this particular industry. And I am going to confine myself to the most critical ones, which are the 4 that are highlighted. Number 1 is court processes. The challenge has been no uniform decisions or interpretations of debt cancelling processes and provisions of the Act by the bench or by the magistrates. We have had experiences where credit providers were terminating debt review whilst there were court orders in place. Legal fees are a challenge, it's exorbitant or expensive for consumers through their debt cancellers to make applications to court. And lastly, there was lack of cooperation from credit providers. The proposed solutions that we have come up with as the regulator, talking to the 4 that I have already highlighted, are the following. The NCR has conducted and is continuing to conduct workshops with magistrates and heads of various courts. This is already bearing fruit in the sense that pastorates are now better understanding the counseling processes, and now there's uniformity in terms of the decisions emanating from the various benches. Furthermore, specialized courts in certain provinces have been established to deal specifically with death counseling matters. Second courts or periodical courts as well have been established in certain provinces as well to deal with death counseling matters. And we are very happy to announce to the committee as well that we have confirmation from the Department of Justice that there are no backlogs currently with regards to death counseling cases. The second challenge that talks to providers emanating while there are court orders in place, this is being addressed by the current amendments to the National Credit Act. The challenge about legal fees, so exorbitant legal fees, what we have done as a regulator is we have engaged the various law societies, asking them to provide free legal services where possible. We have also approached the Lives of the Legal Aid, the Legal Resources Center and other NGOs to come to the party, and this is bearing fruit as well. As far as stakeholder engagement is concerned, or lack of cooperation between trade providers and debt counselors, the NCR has enacted codes of conduct both for credit providers and for debt counselors. And the codes actually are requesting all the parties to be cooperative with one another and to agree to any interventions that the NCR may come up with. I will circulate copies of the Credit Industry Code of Conduct to combat over-indebtedness, as well as the Debt Counselor's Code of Conduct for Debt Review to the House. Prior to doing that, let me just quote Section 2 thereof. The first one being of Credit Industry Code of Conduct to combat over-indebtedness. Reading it in the record, credit providers pledge to lend responsibly to consumers to avoid over-indebtedness and take all internal consumer credit information as well as all information available on credit bureaus in consideration when granting credit. And to participate truthfully in the application process. To ensure that affordability assessment consider all financial means, conduct affordability assessments, and all that. And Section 2.2 thereof talks specifically now to debt counseling. Credit providers have pledged that they will support and cooperate fully with the NCR, debt counselors, and payment institution agents to facilitate agreements and cooperation among the respective stakeholders. They will make every effort in good faith to engage with the counselors and payment distribution agencies in order to resolve operational difficulties that may occur in implementing this particular code. They will act cooperatively, fairly and reasonably in liaising with a consumer and a debt counselor representing the consumer in the debt review process. And the debt counselor's code of conduct Section 2.3 thereof also says that counselors will support and cooperate with the NCR in its role of facilitating agreements and cooperation between the stakeholders. That counselors will fully cooperate with credit providers and PDAs in ensuring that the debt counseling process works efficiently. They will make every effort to engage with credit providers and PDAs in order to resolve operational difficulties that may occur in implementing the code. They will raise and discuss such operational issues with credit providers and PDAs in good faith. They will make every effort in cooperating with credit providers to ensure the achievement of debt rearrangement proposals that are realistic in achieving debt rehabilitation. Furthermore, there will be consumer awareness education. I will then distribute this accordingly.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tuvane. Thank you. If we'd like to get some copies of that because of questions coming up just now. So if you would hand that over to, I just don't see the young lass at the moment. But perhaps you can get it to Raj so that we can, during the tea break, get these post stats done, please. That's number one. The second thing is, just prior to, you know, while we're taking this tea break, perhaps you can use it for the period among yourselves as well to just get the racial breakdown of the debt impaired. You've given us the total number of registered debt counsellors as at the end of July 2013, and what we would like, and you've given us the race, the gender, etc. I'm not asking for the profession per se of such the debt impaired, but if you can give us the racial breakdown and the gender thereof. If these are the counsellors, you see. I wonder if my request is clear. So we want a breakdown of the debt impaired. Who are these people? As I see, you've broken the counsellors down. And we want to be able to analyse it and perhaps raise a question thereof. All right. So maybe you could utilize this little break time. We're going to have a tea break, which I think is about now. Is it 11 o'clock? Yes. For a change, we're on time with the tea. Let's hope the tea's on time. Is it? It is. So we're going to take a 10-minute break, please. Thank you. Mr. Thring, yes.
If it's at all possible for our presence...
Sorry. Could I also ask if it's possible for the for our presenter to maybe give us some of the statistics if, while they're doing some research that you've asked about those who have been rehabilitated. We've seen those who have applied for debt counselling, but what progress has been made in terms of those who have been rehabilitated as well? Thank you, Chief.
The members, we're going to get have the opportunity now to raise these questions. I hope that the other copies will be available by the time we get back. But let's go and have a little tea break, relax for a bit and unwind.
Thank you.
Are we all here? Thank you very much, Honorable McIntosh. You don't feel you could come a little bit closer? We don't want to run a church. You know, right, I mean, you know, that's it. Yes, that's fine. Members, the DTI in particular, in terms of perhaps not the DTI but the NCR, we were just requesting certain clarifications, which the time may have provided you this opportunity, and so on. But just so, Honourable McIntosh, you may not have been here when I said this. I know the Honourable Singh wasn't here just at the time, and I know you have another committee, and we've indicated that to people. But that our decision has been that prior to getting
the National Credit Act Amendment Bill, prior to getting that, there was a need for us to follow up on all of these credit issues in the last 2 years, in particular last year, and earlier on this year, before you will remember, when we actually had a private member's bill, you know, here as well, but I think the Honourable McIntosh was here. And get this whole status here, plus what's gone through to the NCOP, you know, the select committee and so on, who came up with certain things. And once we have got that, and to ensure that the information we had requested last year, for example, on data, et cetera, we have here, so that when we move forward in terms of a tabled amendment bill, we are once again on track with the latest information. It's not a question of making a decision today. It's a question of getting this information. All right. And it's fortunate for you because you're new in the, you know, to the committee itself, and this gives you that update. Right. So for the high school learners who are here, we are having a status report, an update on the National Credit Act and the process there, the amnesty processes been adopted in the other House of Parliament, the NCOP as well, currently going around the country. So that's what we're looking at today. Thank you. Okay, we remember we come back now for question time, etc., from committee members. Right, so over to members of the committee now. Honourable van der Merwe, Honourable Sring, Honourable Mabasa, Honourable Y. Ely, Honourable McIntosh, in that order for the moment. Yes, Honourable van der Merwe.
So thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. And I want to address my remarks to the first presentation because I basically think that debt counselling is a good idea, and that that actually it's a productive way of assisting people out of a difficult situation. But what I wanted to say was, in terms of credit amnesty, I think we need to be a little bit more nuanced about this. There are two kinds of indebtedness that people find themselves in. One is getting credit for consumer issues, for consumables, for putting food on the table or what, because they can't make it through the month. The other, quite well spoken to, is about investment credit. And I think we have to make that distinction. I think the people that are getting into trouble, my assumption is, are the ones that are doing it for consumables. These are the ones it's credit for consumption, and this is where the danger lies. People getting into trouble because they cannot make ends meet with their salary. I think we have to steam right ahead with credit for development, for credit for businesses, credit for economic activity. But we must be very wary of this other kind of credit. I think we really do need to make that distinction. It has been said that the aim of the credit amnesty is to reduce credit impairment, and that's been said a couple of times, and that's all well and good. It talks about addressing its causes, but surely the reason for all of us to be thinking about this should be prevent indebtedness. And I'm not talking about investment indebtedness, because if you're going to run a business, you are going to borrow money because you need the capital. But if you're going to, just borrow money because you can't afford to get through the month, this is where the problem comes. And I think we should be looking at it like that. I wanted to ask a question on the proposal one, which is it's the least risk proposal. Notes the DTI recommended this proposal to the Select Committee as the proposal would have the least adverse impact on credit providers' risk portfolios. And perhaps in the work that has been done at tea time, you would answer the question, who are these credit providers? Who are we talking about here? Are we talking about the banks, or are we talking about small credit providers on the street, or... and what is their profile? So I just think that we have to relook the way we are addressing this matter. It has to be about reducing indebtedness, not about, and I would say that is consumer indebtedness. Because what we want is people who don't have debt and who are in fact saving in the economy. You know, the flip side of credit is savings. And I think we need to address this in our thinking. Because after all, we've got to think broader about this than just dealing with one single problem which we find facing ourselves now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Van der Merwe. Honourable Sring.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. My first question would be with regards to the presentation on debt counselling. And the question very simply is there a monitoring index which warns us of the level of over-indebtedness within the country? Understanding the problem that, for example, you had in the States with the subprime crisis, and the over-indebtedness of the public, which resulted in the challenge that we had 2008-2009. Do we have some kind of monitoring index in terms of where we are with regards to over-indebtedness in South Africa? If not, why not? If yes, I'm assuming that we do, and if yes, what is that index telling us currently? And then my second question, Chair, is I like the idea, the first presentation, I came in a bit late for that, and my apologies, but I like the idea of restorative justice. There was an article in the newspaper over the weekend of a lady who, and from a previously disadvantaged background, who was erroneously put on the blacklist. She was erroneously blacklisted. The bank firstly acknowledged the problem, that she was put on in error, and then later on refused to compensate. So how do we deal with this situation of restorative justice, particularly for those, and she was a budding entrepreneur but became crippled as a result of her being blacklisted. So how do we deal with those issues of restorative justice, particularly where we have some of the big players involved? Thank you, Jim.
Thank you very much, Honourable Sring. Honourable Mabasa.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Kobe Chair. Thanks for the inputs that we have received. My first question, it's based on page 5 of the Amnesty Project presentation. I tend to think that we should sympathetically look at that first bullet. You know, I'm in favor of that because it's probably a group, some of that group that fall into that, the less than 10,000. Are those that did not intentionally take away much money from other people? You know, it's you may find it's an accumulation of debt of the poor. You know, I tend to think I have a soft spot for that. And the removal of all paid up adverse information, it runs across most of these. And it runs across other options as well. Together with the following bullet, removal of all paid up judgments on an ongoing basis. But what I have observed with interaction with consumers is that the credit bureau do not care. Actually, they are happier. The more they have people kept in the registers, the happier they are. And even if people make attempts to be removed, they will send people from pillar to post, so that there is no appreciation that this consumer is trying to get out. Let's help this consumer to get out. So that's the second point that I'm making, that credit providers also let us down. And then I wanted to just to appreciate those opening remarks on the value of credit, the way it is put across on page 3. You know, it's important that it's repeated. You know, it cuts across very well. But I think another challenge that we face, the service providers, the adverts, I think the world, or maybe at least the country, is the adverts are just too much to consumers. And even those adverts, I don't know if it is not our obligation as government to outrule some of the adverts. The adverts that go the line of saying, I know it could be, I just hope it's still in line with the presenters. You have just won 1.5 million rands because you are a good, reliable consumer. Take 1, 2, 3 steps, communicate with so and so, because if we don't take action against that, I think we are letting consumers down. And then my last point is that the loan sharks, as we act in the manner we are acting, do we see a reduction of the effects of loan sharks, or there is no impact at all? I'm saying this because the loan sharks are also now going very seriously to pensioners, so that when pensioners get their pay, they are waiting there to collect, and also to hold on to their IDs and their bank details. Thanks, Comrade Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mabasa.
I won't repeat this. I forgot that in our outreach campaign, most of the time rural places are forgotten, and they are more vulnerable because of lack of information. So that, what is the strategy of ensuring that rural places are also well informed?
Because you didn't raise the co-op, so I was sort of... I think you'll have to wait, though, for another round for that. thank you very much, Honourable Mabasa. Yes. Honourable Y. Ely.
thanks very much, Comrade Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. I will move from the basis that we've got a constitution in our country, and one of the Bill of Rights, the Bill of Rights also makes an emphasis on the human dignity, access to education. It deals with a number of issues. But to what an extent the credit bureaus and credit providers have fundamentally violated the constitution of the country, the constitutional right. I'm raising this issue because recently in one of the area which is in Port Elizabeth called Kwadwesi, a woman who's sick, incapable, has been removed by the bank, and that woman has been dumped outside, and that borders on issues of the shelter. So I think it's fundamental, because when the woman was capacitated, still having energy to work, she has managed to pay the bond very well. But now, because the sickness is a very complex sickness, and the bank didn't have any kind of a sympathy. So there are a number of those particular cases where a number of people, because when they don't default intentionally, because some of them are retrenched, and as a result of the new condition, then they cannot be able to service the loan, and they suffer the repercussion of not being able to pay to service their debt. But also coming to the issue which is highlighted in page 3 in terms of the first presentation, in terms of the primary aims of the credit amnesty, there's a bullet down there that deals with removing barriers to employment. I think it's probably one of the serious issues, because you still find that number of people are still not allowed, they're still not being employed because of judgment. And amongst those are young people, students, who go and borrow money. And it's a fact that in particular, black majority and Africans in particular have suffered a lot of setbacks because they are coming from the difficult backgrounds and they have to borrow money. And when they can't repay the loan, and there's a crisis when they have to go to the labor market because they are prohibited from entering the labor market because of the burden whilst they were the students. I think it puts, it's a discrimination of which is so sophisticated, and how do we then address that particular aspect? But going to page 6 in terms of the first presentation, on the key recommendations, then we have to go down there. There's an element that is with credit literacy program, but down as well you'd find that there's an element, the line that deals with abuses in terms of garnishing order. I happen to represent workers for years. What we have learned in the system, there's always a collusion between magistrates and whoever. There's a value chain with financial institutions and employers. And at times we find that workers are paying garnishing orders, and when they try to run out from garnishing orders, they would go for administration. And also administration is not assisting them. So these are some of the issues. To what extent have we managed to detect some of the unethical behaviors in the value chain, which is a collusion between certain judges or magistrates and financial institutions, including the notorious employers. I think the last issue, in terms of that page, it deals with the process of consultation. If we consult, how do we ensure that there's an effective consultation? Because in terms of the stakeholders that you described here, I've not seen pensioners, I've not seen NEDLAC. NEDLAC is where you would find all the different social partners. Because if you look the impact, the negative impact, it's unfortunate that we don't have statistics as to what has been the negative impact in terms of productivity. Because when the workers are highly indebted, it becomes difficult for them to be productive. For them, you'd find that it contributes on absenteeism. And the majority of the workers have resigned across the length and breadth of the economy because they want to access provident funds. If we can get that particular information at our disposal, how many workers, even teachers, nurses, because of highly indebtedness, they just resign and cut the their lifespan in the workplace. So if we were to get that, so that we can begin to put remedy in terms of that particular situation. Hence the issue of stakeholders becomes important. How are we effective enough in terms of communication? Are we using the community radio station? So the last one is on the NCR. It's just the institutional capacity to enforce the law. Because if there's what is called a rule of law is not meant for certain people in the society. How do we ensure that, because this is a tricky part, because these people, the motive is profit. So they are going to find a way of dodging the law. But how do we ensure that we must emphasize the cooperation, but do we have capacity and mechanism of ensuring that we enforce the law in terms of ensuring that at the end of the day, our people are not taken for a ride? Thanks very much.
Thank you, Honorable Waiili. We have the second group of the Suri Primary School from Aslan. Is that correct? I see you smiling and nodding. Yeah. Well, never too young to learn about savings, credit, and investment to help your development later on when you enter, when you leave school, etc. Thanks. So, very welcome. Honourable McIntosh?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry I wasn't here. There was a very important presentation going from the IEC on the elections, and I'm on a Home Affairs Committee, but I have read through these good presentations, and I must say the Department of Trade and Industries does do very good slides. But Madam Chair, it's out of it that our committee, we want to have a healthy credit industry in this country, and I think that's the whole thrust of what we're saying. And as you said, Madam Chair, the status report. We also recognise, as Honourable Waiili says, is that there are people who get into problems bona fide, genuinely, but as we all know, it's also some people who either out of ignorance or deliberately abuse the whole credit system. And that is the challenge to create a system, but at the same time to protect our financial system. I mean, you know, Madam Chair, in Argentina, they don't trust their banks at all, the people. So they pay cash and they do it in US dollars. Now, we don't want to get into that sort of situation, and we have come through a very difficult time financially in the world, internationally, and to the credit of South Africa, our financial industry is extremely strong. Now, I don't want to repeat stuff we already know. The department, I think, is on top of its game. If you read these documents, we've got all the things in place to help us. But I think the important thing is that credit is actually a wonderful means for developing, provided people are educated in it. And I think there's, I think there needs to be some kind of emphasis on credit education. Look, maybe it's a subject in schools, maybe it's, but in a family, people learn to do it. I mean, when I was a little boy, I can remember my father buying me a little savings box from the Johannesburg Building Society, and I used to put a little bit of money in my ickies, we used to call them in those days, or those of us old enough, and then I get enough money. So in a sense, my father and my mother were teaching me about saving, caring, and that's often where it has to happen. But I don't know, Madam Chair, we've got this presentation. I think it's a big issue. The most interesting thing I did pick up on was on the same page as Honourable Waiili, page 6, I think, where is this reference to Brazil. And maybe we should do a bit more research on Brazil, where they follow up on debts on an ongoing basis. But, Madam Chair, finally, I think if any of us knew how much the banks know about our financial positions, we would be astonished. The financial institutions have incredible databases on people, and that's one of our problems in Home Affairs, is a lot of these duplicate IDs. There are people who like duplicate IDs. They've got one for this bank and another ID for that bank, and they're very happy to play the system.
Well, I certainly hope there's not quite hard operating, but let me leave that on. Honourable Khadebe?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that on this very important topic of debt cancelling and the issue of the debt industry, the financial industry, Chairperson, what I'd like to know from the side of the department, that since the adoption of the new Companies Act, how do they monitor the debt cancellers themselves to ensure that they are doing what they're supposed to be doing? How do they ensure that they don't dump their customers along the way? Because, Chairperson, I had a nasty experience where in my constituency I referred my constituent to a debt counselor. And then the debt counselor, which was 2 months down the line, you get an information that, no, I could not be helped there because they said that I was too over indebted. That was very bad. That was very, very, very bad. Because I think that when we take people there, really they must have confidence in the structures we put as parliament. So I don't know, is there any code of conduct for the debt counselors? Is there any monitoring mechanism from the side of the department to ensure, or the national credit regulator, that these people are doing what they are supposed to be doing? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Khadebe. There are two or three points. I've already raised one of them, and in particular, I think the researcher had also indicated to the NCR about the debt impairment in relation to the provinces, you know, the breakdown there. How many in Gauteng, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, etc. Although one does find that Limpopo, considering its population, seems to be doing pretty well. But on the slide of the NCRs, what does alarm me, I must communicate with you, is the situation appears to have somewhat worsened, if not just remained the same, from 2009, when one had the occasion to address the debt counsellors and raise the issue there that although we finding that all of your debt impairment was the white, or were we finding it was among the population generally, because your debt counsellors, you know, these were actually 90% white at the time. Now, the situation has not improved all that much, you see. And to me, this is alarming that a decision that appeared to have been taken at that point that this would be reviewed and broadened doesn't appear to have been done extremely well. One of the issues that came up then is one of the reasons why you weren't going to get debt counsellors among the historically disadvantaged black Africans or whatever, is because it costs money to be a debt counsellor. Meaning, you know, you may have had these qualifications, wanted to do that, want to help people, but you had to carry yourself for 4 months or something, and a lot of people were not capable of carrying themselves for that length of time. Now, I don't know whether that is still the case or not. The second thing is, it doesn't appear as if the debt the data base has been cleaned up yet. We raised this issue 2 years ago, 1 year ago, and at the beginning of this year. Now, I would like to know how well you have cleaned up the databases, how you've monitored them at the lenders. What is happening here? What kind of databases are they keeping in this regard? It is not acceptable at all what's going on. Now, I don't know how the committee are expected to take a decision with an impaired database. You see? So, now, the other issue is on the no uniform position by magistrates or something. And I note that you did take action there to run several workshops, remember? And I think those workshops certainly will go a long way, I'm hoping. It does worry me, though, that the act in front of us allows for such a broad range of flexibility from the magistrates, because it could lead to injustice along the way in this regard. Recently a case was reported in terms of married women who got divorces and who, under the coercion of their then husbands, had been persuaded to also stand liable for everything. Now when they got the divorce or whatever, they found there they were with no money from the husband who'd done a little flit, you know, run around and hit or something, but very difficult to get hold of him, you know, the former husband. And now this woman would be saddled with the debt that she had not incurred. Now we can't continue to have that kind of thing happening here. The last point one would like is to emphasize the point made here so far by our members. We need to get a clear understanding that we want access to credit for investment and development. We must have that. But we need to understand the causes better of what we call, consumer in a debt, as it were, buying things to put bread on the table. I've seen people in supermarkets using credit cards over 6 months to put a shop on. You can't do this. I mean, you can do it. That's the problem. You can. And what's worse, you go into shops and you try to cut your credit down and they say, well, congratulations. And you think, what on earth for? We can offer you more credit. Can we? What would you like? I said, I don't want any more. I want it cut. You see, they invite you to indebt yourself. And I think these are dangerous practices which are skirting and flirting around the law. Thank you. There are questions for DTI as well as the NCR. Let's start with DTI, clear the decks there, and then let's go to the NCR.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks very much to the honorable members. These questions are involved, I can see, but I thought some of them will have to be answered by the regulator, because they are the foot soldiers on the ground. I'm not reneging from my responsibilities, but a lot of them I will refer them to the regulators, but if that was going to be unfair, I can be reminded that they belong to the DTI for interventions. The first one, on the credit for food consumables vis-a-vis investment or development. Yes, agreed. I think Honorable McIntosh dealt with that thoroughly, to say when you remove people from their problems, you need to educate them. So therefore, education is the theme here, in so much that therefore, now that you are removed from that predicament of yours, you need to have sort of financial literacy and the like. And therefore, you need now to go back to make a loan for real issues, not for consumables, if I may use the expression. So for us, it's education. Otherwise, people will be removed from this database of credit bureaus, and then you find that they go back. They are abusing the system. Some of them will be deliberate, but most of them may be because of lack of education in the area. That's how I can talk to it, but the regulator may insist, may add something. May I finish with what I see as a DTI area of competence. So it's true that we want to prevent indebtedness, and then this amnesty should be responsible from our side. And then we think if we implement the recommendations, whether it's one or two as we indicated, it will have a dent on consumer impaired information. There is issue of credit providers. Who are they? Who are they? Are they the banks, small machinists and the like? I think the credit provider, the NCR registered these credit providers. They are the best people to see. We are talking about 1, 2, 3. So the banks fall in that category, but I think they will substantiate. Monitoring index, the GTI, we have a foot soldier who will say we put this in system and therefore we monitored it this way. It's working, or we want to improve. The NCR will deal with that. So I'm not dodging the problem. Ours is to come with policy and legislation and request an institution to assist us in seeing how to revamp the system if it is not working. So probably they will come with the issue of monitoring, and monitoring in that regard. There was the issue of Honorable Mabasa on the issue of favoring recommendation 1, and then also credit bureaus, they do not remove the people who are already in the system because maybe they are enjoying to put them there. So it is true that the DGI went with recommendation number 1, but the owner of this project, which is the select committee, chose number 2. Now this process, it is in cabinet. Cabinet may pronounce on, and I'm just exaggerating, on recommendation 3 as an example. So therefore parliament as a whole may need to confer with each other and come with a one sober decision that can be communicated to the public. But yeah, that's as far as I can paint the picture. But we came with 1. So thanks that we have a dissenting voice that is supporting the DGI. But we cannot take the matter further as for now. The issue of luring, is it luring, inviting the consumers to, because they may be paid up and then now they are being lured to enter into further debt and the like. I think the issue of education again, to say, if I have achieved what I wanted that loan for, why do I want to go in another? I addicted and the like. The issue of education can play the role, but the NCR and as well as the consumer education, we have the Consumer Act that has got education in its own, on its own. In some of that, I think from our side as GTI, in consumer education, not the NCC, National Consumer Commission, but as the DTI, we have identified that we produce a lot of laws and expect the agencies to implement them or to conduct education, whereas the best people who can understand those legislation are in the policy and legislation. So we don't have that consumer education of our laws as the department. As for now, we have identified that as a weakness, and then we are capacitating ourselves to educate on the laws that we have ourselves, not to rely too much on the agencies like NCR. So I'm just emphasizing the issue of this issue of advice to consumers to say come back and the like. Maybe the weakness is also in the system from our side, which we have already identified. From now onwards, you will see that we have made advertisement to build capacity on education and awareness of our own laws. That may assist. The issue of restorative justice, I didn't ignore it, I recorded it. I think the foot soldiers will also talk to it, but it is worrying when you see that when you entered into this agreement and then you are not guilty, like the issue of people who were in the death row, some of them were found that they are not the correct person. We should have been tried and put on the death row. So the court dealt with it precisely for that reason, And I think we should also have a system of dealing with this issue. But the NCR may also talk. I'm just indicating that I understand the problem. How to intervene is another issue on capacity, that we should relieve these people of the pain that they are undergoing. But the issue of Honorable Waile, disability, retrenchment, is a problem. It's a problem. I don't have an answer from the DTI as for now. It seems as if I'm deferring a lot to the implementing agency. The McIntosh Honorable talked about the issue of education, education, education. And then I think I'm also emphasizing education, education, even to the Honorable Funded Member. The issue of Companies Act, since its adoption, you find that the debt counselors, they dump their own people who they were assisting. And then I may be trying to be preemptive to say in the current amendments now, we thought it would be better for the NCR to say, I registered you under these terms and conditions. And then since you are not complying with them, therefore I'm withdrawing or cancelling the registration as an example. It's still a matter of debate internally and with the finance department. But it is bad to come with criteria for registration and somebody does this act and then you don't have a remedy. So I'm just trying to jump the gun to say because of this problem and others, it will be better to enforce the conditions that you said. And then if people are left vulnerable, left without a remedy, something should be done to the debt counselors. I'm just giving one example. Whether you sue them or not is another issue, but there can be a remedy. Chairperson, on the issue of the population, the issue of debt counselors, this race against that race, and I think they will talk to it. They will talk to it. The Ganeshi orders, I said in our presentation that it will be better for government as a whole to work in a coordinated manner. The issue of emolument, the issue of Ganeshi orders and the like, you may find that it falls under another department, like the Department of Justice and Constitutional. So they were amending their legislation. They were amending their legislation, if I'm not mistaken. And then we requested our minister to write a letter to say, please consider this issue that cannot be put under the Credit Act. And then you deal with them in your legislation to deal with Ganeshi order, that collusion of the employer and the employer and the credit providers to say, please subtract or deduct money to come to us. There are rules and rules. Therefore, we also talk to that department to deal within the agreed rules and obligations. So that's why I said it would be better to get a status. Where is the bill? Where is that clause that we requested them to do? As for now, I don't have. This afternoon, I requested one of the director to come with the status of that bill to see how they're capturing these issues. I don't know whether it will be talking to the issue of Ganeshi order, but that's how we approach it. So the issue of process in consultation generally, we go to NEDLEC. We go to NEDLEC, we go to the business forums, and then this notice we said we are still going to consult on. And therefore, if we are being directed to say, give it to NEDLEC, we can do so. But people are feeling the pain here. Sometimes NEDLEC, it's a statutory body. NEDLEC should also maybe follow the parliamentary process to say by 1 month or 2nd month we will have finished, but we put a lot of issues at NEDLEC and it becomes, it stays there for time immemorial. So maybe if we can be directed to do that, but with a rider of, say, finish on this time, because people are feeling the pains. But I talked in generalities on some of the issues, and then I referred to the NCR, some of the issues. If there are things still hanging, maybe we can again revert to me, but that's how I can talk to these issues. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chief Director, Mr. Nyathi Tenzi. We hand over at this point to the but I see there's just some Mr. Nyathi Tenzi, is there someone else in DTI wishes to contribute?
Of course. Thanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What I need to do now is just to...
Mashanta, is it?
No, Makaba.
Makaba. All right, thank you. Yes.
Now, one of the issues that I needed to just, just refresh the committee's memory on is, one of the issues that, NCR, requested, their consultant should look at, amongst other things, besides your affordability assessment guidelines, was, to look at other, social protection measures, as part of this credit information amnesty project. Now, flowing from that particular research, there were just a number of, suggestions that were actually put forward in terms of, listing, adverse listing, with regard to consumer information. Now, to actually address, the concern that had been raised by Honorable Waile, regarding, an old woman who was actually adversely listed, in a way that's not proper. There are certain suggestions that have actually been made in terms of how credit providers should go about, to actually list, a consumer's information adversely. The NCR, I know, I think with the consultant, they're actually busy, addressing, the adverse listing rules, with the possibility of amendment on Public Regulation 19.4, as well as Regulation 18.7. So I think that really moving forward in a way would really assist, consumers, to just, regulate how your credit provider should actually go out, about, listing a person's information on the credit bureau. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And now over to the NCR. Yes, thank you very sorry very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. There was a question around, whether, in terms of the monetary index, what do we have? As the NCR, we have what we call a credit bureau monitor that we use to monitor the levels of indebtedness of borrowers, of consumers in the country. That's why earlier on I made mention of the fact that we have 20 million credit active consumers. This is information that is fed to the NCR on a quarterly basis by registered credit bureaus. We have registered 12 credit bureaus to date. So on a quarterly basis, we are able to, we get this information, we analyze it, we aggregate it, and we publish it on a quarterly basis. And we are also able to say, out of the 20 credit active consumers, how many of these have impaired or are classified as impaired consumers. Currently, as at the quarter ended March, that figure was sitting at 47% of the credit active consumers that are considered to be impaired. Now, a consumer is considered to be impaired. I'll tell you how this happens. If a consumer has, say, for instance, 6 credit agreements, and one credit agreement is 3 months and more in arrears, automatically that consumer is considered to be impaired. So it's a very conservative figure. Now, the credit monitor currently, that information talks to credit, it talks to cell phone accounts, telecom, and a few other parts. It's not just credit. But we are getting to what we've done is that we are working at refining that information so that it just talks to credit.
But yeah, that's the monitor that we have in place. And in terms of the impact, rural bases, rural bases, what is our outreach? You know, how do we reach out to, the population in rural areas? We have, and thanks to the DTI, we have joined the DTI in their Contra Lesa initiative. As the NCR, we had challenges in reaching out to, communities in rural areas. Because, when you go to rural areas, there are certain protocols that you need to follow. So through the Contra Lesa, initiative that DTI has introduced, NCR for the past 2 to 3 years has actively, gone on road shows with the DTI to those areas to try and educate, consumers or the community on credit matters. And the issue of, pension payouts and so forth. NCR has on record and has been in various newspapers and community radio stations. We have gone out to pension payout points in various areas of this country. And we've been working very closely with SASSA and the South African Police Services, where we raided, loan sharks, and microlenders, registered microlenders that are operating in the area. And because of those initiatives, we managed to get quite a number of credit providers, the small credit providers, arrested. We have, for instance, referred some of those matters to the tribunal. The arrest criminal cases are opened, and those matters, because they are contraventions of the Act, have been referred to the National Consumer Tribunal. We have been to KwaZulu-Natal, we have been to Limpopo, we have been to Northern Cape, Western Cape, but we've been to a number of provinces. In addition to pension payout points, we've been to mining towns. We went, when Marikana happened, we were already on the ground. When the Diduans, in those areas, in the Western Cape, the farm workers' strikes, when they happened, our inspectors were already on the ground, and they were working closely with the police. So those are some of the initiatives that we have been, busy with. I'm going to ask my team members to respond to some of the questions that have been asked. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, and over to your colleagues. Just give the name for the record. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. My name is Mr. Lisiba Mashaba. I'm the company secretary of the National Credit Regulator. I think the most important question that I want to address is regarding restorative justice. Really, the primary purpose of this credit amnesty is restorative justice. And I say this because with this credit amnesty, the DTI has always wanted to make it totally different from the 2008 credit amnesty. In the sense that the 2008 credit amnesty, it only proposed the removal of adverse listings without proposing additional measures to address the underlying causes of credit impairments and consumer over-indebtedness. So with this amnesty, we not only want to reduce impairments over a long period of time through the removal of the information, but we have also proposed additional measures that will address these problems. We know, for instance, that there are many causes of consumer over-indebtedness, which leads them to their credit records being impaired. And many of these factors are beyond the consumer's control. There was an economic recession in 2008-2009, We know that two years immediately before the implementation of the National Credit Act, there was massive reckless lending because credit providers were anticipating that the lending criteria will become tightened with the implementation of the National Credit Act. And we know that over a period of time, every year you will have an increase in administered prices, such as electricity. We have increases in rates and taxes. And we also have to take into account the effect of inflation on discretionary income. As prices of consumer goods rises through inflation, it affects the money that is available for you to live on. So with a credit amnesty, the proposal to remove the adverse listings should have an impact of cleaning consumers' credit records, making them to qualify for new credit if they can afford it. So we have said the aim of the amnesty is not to promote reckless lending. Once your listings are removed, you should access credit if you can afford it. And we also hope that it will reduce the cost of credit because it's directly linked to your level of impairment. Now I will show you how this concept of restorative justice plays out with this amnesty. First of all, the proposal is we, as a once-off, we remove the adverse listings. And the Select Committee on Trade and International Relations has voted for proposal number 2, which is to remove all the adverse listings, irrespective of their value, as a once-off. And then currently we do have a problem with particularly civil judgments. You know, if a judgment is taken against a consumer, it will be listed on their credit record for a period of 5 years. So for the consumer to have that judgment removed, they will have to apply to a court to rescind the judgment. And quite often they will have to employ an attorney. And that will cost them like 10,000 rand or more than 5,000 rand in legal fees just to have the judgment removed. With this current amnesty, what we are proposing is to effect an entrance to the regulations so that when the consumer pays off the judgment debt, all what the consumer needs to do is to obtain proof of payment from the creditor, submit it to the credit bureau, and the judgment will be removed. So they don't have to incur additional legal costs, and they don't have to wait for 5 years to have the judgment removed. And the same principle will also apply to adverse listings. If the underlying accounts are paid, you don't have to wait for 2 or 1 year for the listing to be removed. It will be removed as soon as you submit proof of payment to the credit bureau. And we believe that this will go a long way in helping our people. We also realize that it's not only sufficient to remove information, we also have to help credit providers with the way in which they are conducting affordability assessments. Because part of the problem which has led to consumer over-indebtedness is reckless lending and borrowing. For example, we know that there are credit providers who are accepting 30 rand a month, which is disclosed as expenses for groceries. 11 rand a month, which is disclosed as rent, and that is accepted. So with these guidelines, we believe that we will help them to improve the way in which they assess credit applicants. And at the same time, the NCR will continue to prosecute reckless lending without fear, favor, or prejudice. And this commitment we have made in all forums that we were given the opportunity to address. As Mr. Mugabe has indicated, we are also tightening the listing rules, you know, the procedure that credit providers must follow when they list consumers. For example, one of the rules that we will introduce is the account must have been in arrears for 3 months before it is listed. Currently, we don't have any standardization regarding this. And also, we will be calling also for an opportunity for consumers to rectify the defaults before they are listed. We have also recommended that there should be a prohibition on the collection of prescribed debt. We know that there are many debt collectors and credit providers who continue to collect debt that has prescribed. A debt that is prescribed means consumers can, in court, raise a defense that they legally do not owe that debt anymore. For example, because a period of 3 years has passed. So we will make it illegal for credit providers and debt collectors to collect this type of debt. And lastly, Chairperson, the other big problem is our people are being denied employment because they are listed at the credit bureaus. In the National Credit Act, currently we have a requirement that credit reports can only be issued for employment purposes if the positions are positions of trust and involve the handling of cash or finances. But we know that every day thousands of reports are being issued to employment agencies for positions, for different positions, and our people are being denied employment. Through this credit amnesty, we are going to propose that all of these recruitment agencies, when they request this report, they must certify that those reports will only be used for positions of trust or financial positions. And if this turns out to be false, their subscriber agreements with credit bureaus will be terminated. Because remember, as a regulator, we do not have jurisdiction over recruitment agencies. We can only hold credit bureaus liable. Thank you, Chairperson.
Sorry about that. Thank you very much, Mr. Masharpa. Now, we come to the NCR, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. One of the questions that was posed was regarding the capacity of the NCR. NCR is a young, growing organization. At the beginning thereof, it was mainly focused on registration of the respective registrants that we have. Credit providers, the councillors, credit bureaus and all that. And this was a massive challenge because it was a young organization. They had a year or so up until June 2007 to have registered everyone that was supposed to be registered, especially credit providers. So the primary focus of the NCR in the early years was on registration. And we only moved into compliance and enforcement of the Act at a later stage. However, we are on top of the situation in terms of capacity. We have partnerships, as we have earlier indicated, on with the likes of the South African Police Service, the National Prosecuting Authority of South Africa, the likes of the South African Social Security Agency, and so forth. And this has enabled us to can be able to reach most of the provinces as far as regulation and enforcement is concerned. One question was with regards to how do we ensure compliance by the councillors. As NCR, we conduct, in my slide I earlier on referred to the monitoring on-site visits that we normally do. All the debt councillors that we have registered are being inspected on a regular basis. There's a dedicated department focusing on debt counseling. Our monitoring officers visit debt councillors' offices to check compliance with the Act, with our conditions of registration, and so forth. Over and above that, we have produced a code of conduct for the councillors that we have circulated for the honourable members that details everything relating to their conduct and how to conduct their business. I must say, we have not hesitated to take action where necessary. To date, we have cancelled the registration of about 11 lead councillors that were violating the conditions of registration and the provisions of the Act. This were done via the National Consumer Tribunal. Chairperson, you have bemoaned the issue with data that is unclean and so forth, and therefore this Honourable Committee cannot be in a position to formulate or form opinions. As a young organization, in the beginning, we had to come up with interim systems. We had to hit the ground running. And we had a system called debt help system for debt counseling, debt help system for debt counseling. This has been utilized by debt counselors to populate information thereon, about applications that have been made and so forth, payments that have been made, and so forth. However, indeed, the system has not been very, very good as it was interim. What we have done as the NCR is we are upgrading the systems. We have gone out on tender and got a service provider to develop a new system. And we hope that we are going to be a very efficient organization as soon as the system is up to date, and we will be in a position to can provide you with accurate data information. Some of the information that I have, I think, which is correct, which has been audited, is with regards to the rehabilitated consumers that is available on the debt health system. And about 3,230 consumers have been rehabilitated. And with regards to the other additional information, Chairperson, we are asking this Honourable House to provide us with an opportunity, since anyway I've been requested to provide you with other information pertaining to my slide. We're requesting the indulgence to can provide you with, at the time when we submit this other information, to can provide you therewith. Thank you.
Right. No, thank you very much. I think we're also saying, you see, with the credit bureau, you heard some examples being given here. The credit bureaus themselves that are registered, as you say, and when they are found to be wanting, the lack of compliance with whatever, certain 11 licenses, for example, have been cancelled. The challenge remains that those that continue to do business, is their data per se where the challenges have arisen, you see. Now, I'm wondering if the system, you say that the system is being upgraded, will the credit bureaus have the system? See, it's the bureaus themselves that their data is not, in fact, leaves a lot to be desired, is impaired. Also, the banks, those who make the loans, etc., their system was found to be impaired as well and was acknowledged, and the clean-up. Now, for us, it's not clear whether these clean-ups have occurred or not, or what the status is of this clean-up. Because there was an acknowledgement, but now we're not sure where it is. Clearly, we may have to invite the Banking Association, which I believe turned 21 this year. Maybe now that they've come of age. Yeah. We'll check on that now. So I think, members, that's one of the outstanding issues from previous reports that we still have a question mark on. Would you like to come in then? Thank you, Ms. Machigari. Is it Mr. Machapa? Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. Certainly the problems regarding data accuracy with regards to the bureaus are very significant. We believe that we are seeing an improvement because every year they must submit reports by their auditors. And those reports address various issues, such as the policies and procedures that they have to verify the accuracy of information that they receive before they load it onto their databases, and also to identify inaccurate information that they already have on databases. Through these reports, what we are seeing over the years, certainly at the beginning, it was a nightmare. And then because we didn't have a structured way of monitoring them at the beginning, now that the regulations are in place, we are seeing improvements. And also with regards to their handling of complaints and the turnaround times for resolving those complaints, we do get this information on a yearly basis through audit reports. But we believe that there is still room for improvement. And once again, we would welcome an opportunity to do further work and come back and report to this committee.
Thank you very much, DTI, Mr. Machapa. You wanted to come in yourself, Ms. Machigari, I'm not
sure. No, sorry, Chair, this is Mr. Machapa's room, here. Sorry, thanks.
No. Thank you very much. Just looking over to my right. I know this has taken us a little bit longer than we expected, but I think that we needed to take this time. All of your questions and comments were important. We needed to get that response. Now, there may well be one or two areas that we may have overlooked. I'm sure you appreciate that. And we will then, in discussions with the committee, come back to you in writing to request further information. And of course, we must make it clear that we know that there has been a process of improvement in the last 3 years. We acknowledge that. Our concern is that the certain areas remain that we need to interrogate or drill down, is a better word, especially now that we are looking at a review of, you know, getting the status and then preparing ourselves to really do our oversight on a new national credit bill that will come before us. And on that basis, we would need to be as effectively informed as possible to ensure that what you are going to propose through DTI, etc., comes out as a much more robust piece of legislation itself. Right. And I've made myself clear on that. So, members, I'm not going to be too generous to allow you to come back with a second round. I know I made a little reference to it, but time is not with us. So I hope you'll understand and that we'll put any further issues to them in writing in this regard. Thank you to DTI. Thank you to the National Credit Regulator. Thank you very, very much. We do appreciate this. Now, members, you will recall I spoke about announcements and the program. I will ask the secretary of the committee, Mr. Hermans, just to brief us on the program. But before I do that, let me come through to a letter we have received from the Portfolio Committee on International Relations and Cooperation. The dialogue on South Africa-Cuba relations, successes and challenges towards the implementation of processes aimed at kick-starting economic processes in Cuba. And this will occur, no, thank you, I can see that date. This dialogue, and you will recall in respect of this committee, we have been instrumental in passing the decision to for the grant plus, of course, loan, the combination, you will recall that. And this is a very important thing, and the dialogue will start tomorrow, Parliament Good Hope Chamber, 14th August, 11:30, or past 11 to 1600. Now, I am aware, member, before you think I have forgotten what your program is, that we do have an engagement ourselves, beginning the public hearings on the Lotteries Amendment Bill, which may well end at about 12. It's scheduled until 1, but it does leave you free in the afternoon. Of course, it is not compulsory, but I would encourage you to make yourself available and to attend. So that is happening in Good Hope from 11:30 until 4 o'clock on the 14th. It's the only announcement I believe we have, other than now the program challenges we've experienced. Thanks. Over to you, Mr. Hermans.
Chair, with respect to the program, there has been a change to the program. As indicated in last meeting, the carbon tax engagement will take place on the 20th of August, that's next Tuesday. A change to the program relates to the request by the Minister to respond to the recent loan made by the NEF. The Minister has indicated his availability on the 23rd of August to address that matter. Also, the Minister has requested to respond to the issues related to the workshop that we had on trade, on the trade agreements. He wishes to come and brief the committee on that. Also, what we'll probably schedule for that day as well is to conclude the SADC protocol agreement that is before the committee ratification, February 3rd, final 23rd. No, the hearings will finish on the 16th, that coming Friday. So we have 2 days of public hearings on the lotteries bill at this stage. So it's tomorrow and Friday, and depending on the submissions, the amount of the submissions received, we will then either have further hearings or proceed with the program.
Yes, just on this issue of the carbon, which came up, which we considered, all of us, all members of the committee, very important. We do believe it is something that Manco is looking at, but it would appear as if the finance itself should also attend to supplement and complement, rather, the information that we will be getting in this regard. It is very important, and I think members all appreciate that particular one. The other issue is, yes, the National Lotteries Amendment Bill. We had hoped for a lot more submissions, especially as issues have been coming, concerns have been raised with the committee over the last 3 years. And it may be pertinent for us to assess the way we are advertising or inviting such submissions. We've done it on community radio, fair enough, not all of them. There has been other forms of advertising, but somehow we don't seem to be effectively reaching to those who would want to benefit in some way from the grants that would be allocated in this regard. That's the one issue. The other issue is that the issues have been raised around the speed with which the grants are made, you know, and so on, and yet we're not getting the same inputs. And I wonder, and I need to say this, we said it before as a committee, some people may think you need to be a lawyer to make a submission, or go and get a consultant to make your submission. They don't realize that it can be quite simple in a letter and make themselves available. And there's also then the problem of travel costs, which, yes, we do try to accommodate here and there, but clearly there isn't a pot of gold here, you know, so somehow we have to strike a balance. But I was surprised, and I'm sure you are, that we haven't received many more applications. So you are all encouraged to see how else you can disseminate this information. And I said to the Secretary, we should make submissions, we should extend it a little bit and allow people to continue to send in until next week. All right. I hope everyone is clear on that. So well, I don't want to detain you any longer, but we are meeting tomorrow. Where are we meeting? And V? We're meeting again in this old assembly chamber tomorrow at 9. Yes, thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.